University Broadcast Studio. It's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Hour 3 of The Big Show, broadcasting from Southern Command, Memphis, Tennessee. Hope you're doing great today, folks. A little warm, a little humid today here in the Deep South. Hope it's pleasant wherever you might be. By the way, this information just coming in from New Orleans, the mayor there, they're very concerned about the Kung flu, the China virus, and they put out a notice to the entire community, and they have a special message for all of you white folk, you Caucasians, pale-faced people. Listen up. If you are white and privileged, this is coming from the mayor's office. If you are white and privileged, COVID-19 is still coming for you. And to act irresponsibly because you think you may be safe is unconscionable during a pandemic. That woke word coming from the mayor's office in New Orleans, Louisiana. All right, 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. I know our good friend from LJ, Georgia, Joe from LJ, Joe McCutcheon, is going to be very happy because he is a huge, huge fan of Stephen Moore, author of Trumponomics, and Stephen Moore is on the Liberty University Newsmaker line right now. Hey, Stephen, how's it going?
Todd, great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me. By the way, and you know, anybody with white privilege, you know, you may just not want a vacation this year in New Orleans.
Well, there you go. I mean, it was funny, Stephen. You know, the governor.
They don't want the money from white privilege people. So just skip the idea. Stay away from New Orleans. You're not welcome there.
I was trying to explain to folks yesterday, you know, the governor of New York and was it Connecticut and Jersey, they're quarantining, they're setting up the roadblocks, and people from Georgia and Alabama, Arkansas, Texas, not allowed up there for summer vacations. And Stephen, I just got to tell you, most of the folks from those states normally do not vacation north of the Mason-Dixon line. So
the irony, of course, I just wrote a column on this, by the way, that first of all, the idea that, you know, New York is telling people from, say, Florida or Texas not to come to New York is like the East Germans telling the West Germans you can't come in. And the fact is that the death rate, folks, if you live in Florida, the death rate is 10 times higher in New York than Florida from coronavirus. If you live in Texas, the death rate is 15 times higher in New York than it is in Texas. So for Andrew Cuomo, who has the worst record of any governor in America, to be, you know, sermonizing anyone about or lecturing anyone about, you know, keeping people safe. I mean, there is no one who has a worse record in the United States of America than Andrew Cuomo. He is responsible for thousands of nursing home deaths. He's the one who kept the New York public, the subway system open, which was the major transmitter of the disease. I mean, he has been completely incompetent, and now he's trying to cover up for his incompetency by saying, oh, we're not going to let people in from Florida. There aren't too many people from Florida who want to go back to New York anyway.
It's a good point. I mean, it's a fair point. And I was on your Twitter feed and you shared this interesting piece. You know, our show based here in Memphis, Tennessee, and now the Tennessee state government is not releasing as much information about nursing home residents who are getting the virus. And again, we're talking about a demographic of people who are more likely to get the virus and die from the virus. And yet they're not releasing that information. And it does make you wonder what's going on there.
Well, which state is that in Tennessee?
Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, Tennessee's had pretty low, you know, death rates overall. They're one of the bottom 10 in terms of death rates. So, but look, the coronavirus is an old person's disease. It's like Alzheimer's. The older you get, the much more likely you are to get it. And young people have very little to worry about, which is why it was insane that we shut down schools. That'd be like saying, let's shut down schools so our kids don't get Alzheimer's. I mean, it's a stupid, policy. Now, that's not to say everyone, you know, there was always I mean, if you put your kid on the bus to go to school, there's always a chance he might die in a bus accident. But these odds are very, very low. And what we need to do now is we need to make sure we keep seniors safe. That's what we should. We never needed to shut down the American economy. I think it'll go down in history as one of the greatest blunders in the history of our country. All we really needed to do is what we didn't do, which is keep our seniors safe in nursing homes and hospitals and care facilities, because, you know, the average death age of someone who died from coronavirus is close to 80.
You know, Stephen, when you look at, you know, some of the states that have reopened, Georgia, for example, I mean, business, they're back, they're open, they're flourishing. Meanwhile, you've got, I mean, places like New York City, and I lived there 15 years, just moved right as the virus was breaking out. And I'm hearing horror stories from business owners, those small business owners. And it seems to be red states that are open, things are going good. Blue states, not so good.
Well, that's an understatement. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, it's blue states are a total disaster. We just came out with the state unemployment data by the U.S. Department of Labor last week, and it shows that the 10 states with the highest unemployment, there's 10 states that have unemployment rates over 15%, and 9 of the 10 of them are blue states. That's New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island. I forget the other two, but the only state among the top 10 that does not have a Democratic governor is Massachusetts. And Massachusetts is one of the most liberal states in the country. They happen to have a Republican governor, but the rest of the state is pretty liberal. And so that's right. I mean, you've got the states that are run by Democrats are run into the ground and they're losing all their jobs. Meanwhile, the 5 states with the lowest unemployment rate are states like Montana, Idaho, Utah, Iowa, states like that, and they have Republican governors. So it shows that, you know, if you get your policies right, you don't have to put millions of your people into unemployment lines.
Hey, what do you make of these business owners out in Seattle in this, what they call it, CHAZ, then CHOP, but you've got more than a dozen businesses out there. They're suing the mayor, and they're saying, hey, look, you guys aren't doing your job out here, and we're about to go belly up.
Well, you know, what's wrong with these people? Don't they understand they can always go to the independent country of CHAZ? Is it CHAZ or what are they calling it now? I can't remember.
It's either CHOP. It's the Capitol Hill
CHOP,
odorous pansies or something.
They change the name every 3 days. But look, this is very serious. These cities like Seattle, cities like Philadelphia, cities like my home city of Chicago, cities like New York, obviously, Los Angeles are in big, 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 big trouble because they can't keep their residents safe. The jobs are leaving. The businesses are leaving. And I don't say this with any joy. I mean, I love America's cities, and they're being destroyed, again, by liberal governments. If you can't keep people safe and you can't keep the businesses from being stolen from and also, you know, burned down in some cases, the businesses aren't going to be there anymore. In Chicago, two of the biggest employers in one, you know, major minority neighborhood were the Target and the Walmart. And the police did nothing and the mayor did nothing to keep those from being looted. And guess what? You know, Walmart and Target are saying, you know what, we're shutting down here. And that means, you know, thousands of jobs for the people in those low-income areas are being lost. I mean, the people are the victims of these riots and these protests and the arson. It's the low-income minorities who live in these neighborhoods.
Stephen, how are things looking? And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Moore, the author of Trumponomics on the Newsmaker line, looking towards November, how quickly do you think the economy is going to rebound?
I'm not as optimistic as the president is. And, I'm a big admirer of this president. I worked for him, during the campaign. And so I think he did an amazing job in his first 3 years as president rebuilding the American economy. And let's not forget, we had the best economy in 30 years, thanks to Donald Trump, until the coronavirus hit and the Democrats started shutting everything down. But it's going to be, in my opinion, it's going to be a slow slog getting things back up. And we did severe damage to our economy. You can't shut down businesses, and you can't, put 35 million people into unemployment lines and stop the flow of commerce in our country and then think all you have to do is send out trillions of dollars of checks and somehow everything's going to be okay. it's not going to be okay. It's going to take a long time to get these businesses up and running. Some of those businesses will never come back. I'm on the board of two companies. I don't think, you know, we were doing pretty well, and then they shut everything down, and I think both companies may end up failing. You know, that's happening by the millions to our businesses, our small businessmen and women who are the heroes of our economy. So I think it's going to be a tough road to hoe. I think, you know, the real question when you ask about the number is Americans, when they go to the polls, it doesn't matter whether you like Donald Trump or you like Joe Biden or what your feelings about them is. The real question to ask is, which of these two people, Joe Biden or Donald Trump, do you think is better to rebuild our economy? Now, if you don't answer that question right, I think you need to get your head examined, because I think it's pretty clear that, you know, Trump is a businessman. He's done it before. He will do it again. But I'm very fearful. His numbers are not great right now. And people are, people are more concerned right now about being politically correct and so on than actually making sure we have jobs to go to, and we have income, and we have paychecks.
It's a fair point and an honest assessment. Stephen, appreciate you coming on the show. We'd love to have you back sometime.
Anytime. I'm glad, you know, you've got a loyal listener and my good friend Joe McCutcheon. And so it's great to be on your show. And you let me know, and I'll be on anytime you want.
By the way, Stephen, has he taken you down to that barbecue joint in Georgia that he talks about, the Pool's Barbecue?
He invited me many times, and the next time I go to Atlanta, I'm driving out there because I hear it's the best barbecue in America.
I got to tell you, you're going to like it. It's really good barbecue. I think you're going to like it. All right, Stephen Moore, ladies and gentlemen.
Even better than the barbecue in Memphis?
Oh, no. That's heresy right there. That's...
All right.
Night and day, Stephen. All right, Stephen Moore from the Heritage Foundation writes for the Wall Street Journal and author of the great book, Trumponomics. Folks, we got to take a break here. 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stern Show.
America's only fair and balanced talk radio host, Todd Starnes.
Welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. This story just coming in from Associated Press. Nearly 1.1 million coronavirus relief payments went to dead people. This is according to the Government Accountability Office. More than 130 million so-called economic impact payments were sent to taxpayers back in March. The Government Accountability Office cited the number of erroneous payments to deceased taxpayers in its report on government programs. While the government has asked survivors to return the money, it's not clear they have to. Bill Main, guess how much money went to dead people?
Oh, gosh, I couldn't even begin. Let me just say maybe half a billion.
1.4 billion dollars.
Wow.
$1.4 billion went to dead people. How is that possible?
I could do you one a little bit better. I don't have the exact dollar figure here, but the IRS is wanting its money back from all the prisoners that they accidentally sent the money to for the stimulus.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to get right on that.
I'm sure they'll jump right on it.
Law-abiding citizens. No doubt about it. $1.4 billion. Folks, I hope you heard what Stephen Moore had to say. Huge fan of the president, wrote a book about his economic policies. He's concerned about where things are going with the economy. He's concerned. And I'm still believing this president is going to win in a landslide, because I find it hard to believe that this country would put Joe Biden in the White House, but crazier things have happened. But I still believe this president's going to win in a landslide. But if this economy tanks, and if we start seeing massive unemployment numbers and businesses going belly up, it could get dicey. It could get dicey. Have you heard about this story out of Minneapolis? I just love stories like this. These kinds of stories, they lift my spirits. They make me feel better about myself. A predominantly white progressive neighborhood in Minneapolis that pledged not to call the police in the aftermath of the George Floyd death is now dealing with a massive homeless encampment in a local park. This is Powderhorn Park. This is a very well-to-do neighborhood, and the people there, very liberal, very woke, and they felt bad about picking up the phone and calling the police for help if something bad was happening, because they felt like that was a form of white privilege. So they went public and they said, you know what, we're not going to call the police anymore. We're going to live and let live. And so what happened? Well, the next day, 300 homeless people showed up, along with a bunch of drug addicts and prostitutes and sidewalk sallies, the whole nine yards. Drug dealers have shown up to meet their clientele. One person overdosed inside the park. Prostitution has been reported in the area. Residents, though, have agreed to check their privilege and protect people of color by not involving law enforcement to report instances of property damage. This is according to FoxNews.com. Carrie Nightshade says, I'm not being judgmental, explaining why she no longer allows her kids 9 years old and 12 years old to play in the park by themselves. It's not personal. It's just not safe. Oh, that's not very woke of you, Carrie Nightshade. Why don't you want your children to play with the prostitutes and the drug addicts, Carrie Nightshade? You racist woman. Another resident, Mitchell Erickson. Oh, he felt terrible. You know why he felt terrible, folks? Well, a couple of black teenagers cornered him a block away from his house. They put a gun to his chest and demanded his car keys. Apparently, he mistakenly handed over his house keys instead, and the teenagers left and stole another car somewhere else. Mr. Erickson was very distraught by what he did. I've been thinking about it. I regret calling the police. I regret calling the police. It was my instinct, but I wish it hadn't been. I put those boys in danger of death by calling the cops. So these black kids nearly shoot this guy in the chest, and yet they're the victims. Do you see what's happening in the country, folks? These people are idiots. They're nuts. They're slap crazy stupid. But these people are the ones that are procreating, and they're giving birth to these other progressives that are out there toppling statues and taking over city blocks and turning them into autonomous zones. Do you understand what's going on here? I mean, the people in this neighborhood ought to be the poster children for abstinence. All right, got to take a break here. Charlie Kirk coming up. Plus your calls, 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
Down this system and replace it, all right? And I could be speaking figuratively. Okay. I could be speaking literally. It's a matter of interpretation. Like, let's be very real and let's observe the history of the 1960s. Mm-hmm. When black people were rioting, we had the highest growth in wealth, in property ownership. Think about the last few weeks. Since we started protesting, there have been 8 cops fired across the country. I don't condone, nor do I condemn rioting, but I'm just telling you what I observe.
Uh-huh. All right. That was a Black Lives Matter leader last night on Fox News Channel with Martha McCallum. President Trump, just a few moments ago, tweeted this out in response. If he says this is treason, this is sedition, this is insurrection. And the president is correct on all three points. That's exactly what it is. And good for the president for calling this out and standing up to these rioting thugs, domestic terrorists, in my estimation. Well, I want to go to the Liberty University newsmaker line. Very honored to have the great Charlie Kirk with us. Charlie, I've got to get through the list here of all the things you do. I don't know how you have the time. He is host of the Charlie Kirk Show and just had the president on, by the way. Incredible podcast. Chairman of Students for Trump. And president of Turning Point USA. Author of the book, The MAGA Doctrine. And he is a prolific tweeter as well. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Honor to be here. You're a good friend, Todd, and a good American. God bless you.
Well, likewise. Hey, I was watching the president's big shindig with the young people there in Arizona. And who do I see on the front page, on the front stage there? Charlie Kirk. Must have been a great event. And it sounded like those students are on fire and still very much in the president's camp.
No, it was terrific. And, you know, we at Turning Point Action, our 501c4 political vehicle, hosted the president. And look, we were told by the media that this couldn't be done. We were said that no one was going to show up. We were told that, you know, this is the worst thing you can possibly do. And, you know, we believe in freedom. And part of believing in freedom, Todd, is believing in responsibility, believing that you must make informed choices when you have that freedom. And if you feel that you don't want to leave the home, then don't leave your house. And so, but it was incredible. We had 3,300 young people show up in 107-degree heat in Arizona. They waited 8 hours outside. As you know, going into a presidential event can be a long exercise, and they waited patiently to just hear and see their president. And it was incredible. And I think that the base for the president is much larger and more committed than the media would ever give it credit for. And I think the president gave one of his best speeches I have seen him give recently, and he talked about the culture war that is raging in our country. He said that we will not allow our statues and our history to be deleted or removed, and the enthusiasm was off the charts, and it was one of the greatest honors of my life to be able to host the president at this moment in time when we need to aggressively launch a counteroffensive against the radical left and what they're doing to our country.
And look, and you've been at the forefront of that effort, Charlie, going back to when you founded TPUSA. I mean, I think you were one of the first out there alerting people to the fact that there was a war on our culture underway. And this went far beyond just the war on religious liberty. We're talking about a war on our founding documents and who we are as a country.
That's exactly right. And look, I'm going to be honest. Most Republicans right now are sitting idly by while our country is burning from within. Most Republicans are not standing with the backbone. And God bless the president for what he's doing. And God bless Jerry Falwell Jr. You know, people could take a lot of lessons from him. He's a friend of both of ours. And, you know, we had the Falkirk Center for Faith and Liberty. But Jerry Falwell stood up against the mob when he said, you know what, we are going to open up Liberty University, and look, the New York Times and people came after him, and they were so wrong, and they slandered and libeled him. Why don't Republicans and conservatives have the backbone that people like the president and Jerry do? And I'm sick and tired of seeing our country burn from within because of a crisis of leadership, lack of there in a lot of the Republican circles, and a crisis of courage. And so it's either we're going to save our country or not. And it is literally and metaphorically burning right now. And it seems like that there's just not enough people standing for truth right now. And the people that are need to be highlighted and need to be praised for that, because right now we are in a very troubling moment in America.
Charlie, why do you think that is? Why do you think the Republicans, by and large, have taken a pass and they're not fighting alongside the president here?
Well, for a lot of them, they're very weak and cowardly people. And you know, we've known that for years. They also are afraid that the media might call them mean names, which for them is a very important thing for them. They're also in bed with a lot of corporate interests that are also, you know, very interested in a destabilization of America. So they don't want to lose any corporate donors to their campaigns. And look, it's just also, I don't think they're actually worried. I don't think they're actually worried about the future of America. They just are kind of worried if they're going to get reelected. And that's it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone who's spent a lot of time in some of these circles. And it's not everyone. There's some good guys out there. obviously the president, the vice president, Tom Cotton, you know, Devin Nunez, Matt Gaetz, terrific people. And so it's not every single person. And I'm not the only one saying this, Todd. I mean, you're starting to see a lot more people go on television and radio. Say, where is our party? What is going on right now? Like, this is
we've
not
been
acceptable.
Saying that on this radio program.
I know.
Yeah, we've been
God
saying
bless
that on
you,
this radio program.
Trust
it's disgusting.
Me. I know. It really is.
It's disgusting, Charlie. And then when you have people like Carly Fiorina coming out, and you see, this is the other great thing about our president. He's exposing these rhinos for who they really are. Or as Doug Collins says, don't call them rhinos. Call them what they really are. Democrats. I mean, Carly Fiorina says she's going to support Joe Biden. Come on.
You know, it's really disappointing. I know Carly, and I've known her a couple years ago. And what on earth is she thinking? I mean, either she's no longer what she said she was, or she was a liar when I knew her. Because she said she was a pro-life, pro-American, Christian, conservative. And either she's no longer those things, or she never was those things, right? And both things are not really acceptable in my book. And she comes out and says, you're going to vote Joe for Joe Biden. I mean, how only an anti-American could say that. Seriously, only someone who does not want what's best for the future of our country, loves to see the flag burn, wants to see China take over the world, that wants to see more Ruth Bader Ginsburg than us, younger and more radical. And so anyone who supports Joe Biden in that category has total resentment and bitter hatred for America.
It's just really shocking, you know, Charlie, and I've been in this business a long time now, and I'm with you. Carly had her on the show a couple of times. You know, she seemed like the, you know, very
yeah.
authentic person. And then you turn around and you do something like this. I mean, that's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, and so I had someone on my podcast yesterday, Todd, and you'd love this. And they're first generation American whose parents were and grandparents were in the gulags of the Soviet Union. And they gave this beautiful articulation. They said, you're trying to tell me you're worried about Trump's tone and tweets? Like, you haven't been in a gulag prison camp and understand what's happening in this country. They're like, the only thing that matters is what's going to prevent this country from becoming a communist country or a socialist country. And that was like a really refreshing thing to hear, right? Where someone who's actually had to live through this, they think it's so silly and foolish when you have to hear the ruling class discuss, like, oh, I don't like Trump's tone. Like, really? So you'd rather have a nice tone and a socialist country is basically what you're telling me, or an emaciated country and allow China to take us over.
It's a fair point. You know, a couple of years ago, Charlie, I was out getting my hair cut and out in Brooklyn where I used to live, and a predominantly Russian neighborhood. And most of those folks had come over from Ukraine, the Balkans, good people. And this guy owns a barbershop. He got in trouble because he was in New York City. It's against the law to charge more for a woman's haircut than a man's haircut. And the poor Russian barber was like, well, the reason why is, you know, women have more hair than guys do. What's the problem here? And I was interviewing him for a story, and he said, you know, you don't understand, you know, how left this country is going. And he said it's starting to look, and this is like 4 or 5 years ago, it's starting to look more and more like Soviet Russia in places like New York City. And you know, that's a troubling thing, Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's here. I mean, we've always said, oh, we don't want to have America become a socialist country. Well, we're well on our way, and the Republican Party is going to just sit idly by and let this happen. Why are they not preventing these statues from coming down? Why are they not standing with the thousands of conservatives that I keep on profiling that are getting canceled or deleted, that are getting fired from their jobs, the young people that are getting physical retaliation against them? And yeah, there's a couple people that send some nice tweets. Yeah, that's fine. But are you fighting? Like, are you sacrificing something? Are you saying no more? I don't see it. Instead, I see us capitulating to the left. I see us playing their little silly, foolish, anti-American Marxist games. And it's a very, very troubling time, Todd. And we need more courage. And you asked the question, well, why don't we have more courage? Courage is the hardest of the good traits to find. It really is. It is the hardest because it takes sacrifice. You cannot have courage without surrendering, without saying, I'm ready to lose everything. I'm ready to have, you know, the enemy burn it all down, metaphorically or literally. And I'm going to stand for truth. And right now we have people that are so comfortable in their Western lifestyle. And because of that comfort and their lack of action, this all could be put in jeopardy. And,
yeah,
you know, people
well
say I'm being over dramatic and people are saying that I'm being, you know, over sensational. I don't think in the slightest I am. What's happening in this country right now, Todd, because of the lies of the Black Lives Matter movement and the Marxist fundamentalists that are gaining power, corporate America funding it, and the universities behind it, and the churches that are complicit with it. We've never seen anything like this.
Well said. Charlie, we're going to have to leave it there. I have to tell you, though, our call screener for my show, Avery, who's a college sophomore, a rock-solid conservative, he's a huge fan of yours, by the way.
Well, hi, Avery. So thank you. God bless
Good
you.
Good guy.
All right. Hi, Charlie. Hey, it's nice to meet you.
Charlie, look, it's been a lot of fun. We're going to get you back, and I will see you on campus every now and again over at Liberty University. But you're doing
Liberty
a great job for the country.
Best college in America, and God bless you, Todd. Talk to you soon.
All right. Charlie Kirk, ladies and gentlemen, great American patriot right there. He's right. We need men and women of courage and backbones. That's what we need right now. And it aggravates me when I don't see every Republican on Capitol Hill standing up and speaking out about the destruction that's happening. Doesn't that aggravate you? 844-747-8868, toll-free number, 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stearns Show.
You're listening to Todd Stearns.
So here's a trivia question for you. Who is James Basket? James Basket, B-A-S-K-E-T-T.
No idea.
I don't either.
We don't have time to take calls for this segment, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you. He was the second African-American to win an Oscar.
Okay.
What did he win it for?
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting to that.
Oh, I'm sorry?
Who was the first?
It was from Gone with the Wind, Hattie
McDaniel.
McDaniel, right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For Gone with the Wind.
Yep.
And, of course, what happened to Gone with the Wind?
It was taken
it went
off
with
of
the
HBO
wind.
Max, yeah.
They're putting it back on with the disclaimer at the beginning now, or mm-hmm. some intro of some sort. I don't know.
So Walt Disney, back in the day, had a film, 1946. It was called Song of the South.
Yes.
And it was one of these... it was one of these shows where you had cartoons mixed with live action. Mm-hmm. And the narrator was a guy by the name of James Basket, who played a character named Uncle Remus. So James Basket, who played Uncle Remus, he was the second African-American to win an Oscar. And a little bit of film history, trivia, he did not attend the film's premiere in Atlanta because blacks had to sit separately in the balcony. And why did blacks have to sit separately in the balcony? Because the Democrats told them to.
Yep.
Democrats were in charge back then in mm-hmm. Georgia.
Now we have good old Doug Collins.
Little inconvenient truth there. So keep in mind, Congressman Collins did remind us it was the Democrats, mm-hmm. the Democrats in charge. The Democrats tried to stop the Civil Rights Act from being passed. So anyway, USA Today now reporting Splash Mountain at Disney World is getting a makeover. So they're getting rid of the Splash Mountain because it's based on the movie Song of the South. So here's what's interesting is... the film has never been made available on home video. So you can't get it on Disney Plus. You can't get it on home video. So I'm not sure if it's even possible to. Can you imagine a film so that sensitive that from Disney that you are not even able to go out and buy it?
That's pretty intense. Honestly.
I think at one point they had a European release, but the media on which they released would not work on our machines here because they put an encoding on it. So, but I believe that was for a brief time, and then it was pulled from there.
So they're replacing it with a version, something based on the movie The Princess and the Frog, which was really celebrated because apparently it was the first black princess featured in a Disney film. So there you go. it's, folks... This is just the beginning. That's all I can tell you. Now, There was a couple of years ago, there was a big controversy over a production of MLK. I believe this was a stage production of MLK. And you, Bill, you might remember the story where they had selected a white actor to play MLK.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of controversy because they said, no, a white actor cannot play a black role. That's just not allowed anymore. And then, what was it? Avery, you sent me a note yesterday.
Yes.
On Instagram. Mm-hmm. What? Tell me what happened there. There was to that point.
Well, to that point, yeah, there's a show. I'm not sure what network it comes on. It's called Central Park. It's one of those sort of Adult Swim cartoons that are very, very inappropriate that I don't watch or anything like that. But basically, Kristen Bell, who is a white female actress, she's very popular, very talented actress. I will give her that. But she was doing the animated voice for a, I believe it was either a biracial or a just a person of color of on the show. And, you know, Josh Gad, who is one of the co-stars for that show, and also I believe he's one of the creative, he's very involved with the creative process of that show. He put out like some sort of letter that the entire production put out for that show, saying, as Kristen has been reflecting and what we've been seeing in this country, or what's been happening in the country, Kristen has decided to leave that role, which is her decision, that she can do that if she wants to, but they are choosing to hire someone who is biracial or who is a person of color for that role, because I believe he says in order to bring more to the character. And now, really quick, as a film major, we've said that several times on the show that I'm a film major. And as a casting director, you cast your actors to play the characters for your film, TV show, what have you, based on the performance and the level of dedication and performance that they're going to bring to the role.
Not anymore.
Apparently not anymore.
Not anymore.
Because also, fun fact, James Earl Jones was the voice of Darth Vader, who is white. And that's fine because he brings a powerful voice to the role of Darth Vader. So, like, it's really backhanded, and that's really all I have to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, James Earl Jones, he does have a good voice.
He's fantastic.
Oh, God. But I like Sebastian Gorka.
Yes.
He's got a good... Hello. Hello, America. Avery. All right. I'm not quite sure what that was. Hey, folks, tomorrow, Friday, we're going to have a lot of fun. Trivia, chance to win some free stuff, hang out, share a few laughs. Have a good one, everybody.